Hello, and welcome to Shepherd Air Force Base, Texas, home to the largest and most diverse training installation in the Air Force. I'm James Rumfelt with the 82nd Training Wing Public Affairs Office. Today we're going to talk to a couple of folks about some training that in and of itself isn't unique, but the environment in which they train is very different. We hear all the time that we need to train like we fight. In today's global operations, that means sister services working alongside one another in various locations around the world. Airmen, soldiers, and sailors get an early jump on that joint environment in the 366th Training Squadron, where civil engineering specialties are taught. Today with us we have...
Petty Officer James Schlingman, United States Navy.
Sergeant First Class Michaud, United States Army.
Technical Sergeant Christopher Shaw, United States Air Force.
Outstanding. We're just going to go around a little bit and talk to you guys about how long you've been in the military and specifically the career field that you're in. Maybe a little bit about like where you came from, how you decided to join the military. We'll start with you, Schlingman.
So, been in about 10 years. Really was on a whim, decided to join the service.
Yeah.
I had a bad day at work and said, I want out.
How old were you when you came in?
I was 20.
Oh, okay.
Came in at 20, so I had a little experience of adulthood, not that much.
Enough, right?
Enough that I knew I wanted out. Came into the recruiter, said I wanted to be a CB, and here I am.
10 years later.
10 years later, exactly.
And you've been CB the whole time.
CB the whole time, same job the whole time. Career field. We're unique CBs. We kind of have multiple different specialties. So I've been doing plumbing and HVAC for the whole 10 years.
Okay, awesome. What about you, sir?
I've been active duty for about 13 years. I originally joined the Army to pay for college, and I'm still trying to work on that degree. So we'll see how it goes. Been in this career field for about 13 years, but the way the Army does it is all our vertical construction, like the building guys, come together at E6 to 1 MOS field. So I've only been doing plumbing since I actually showed up here back in 2017.
Okay. Okay. And say your last name for me. It's Michaud?
Michaud.
Okay. Yep. Okay. Michaud. Got it. All right. Sergeant Shaw.
I've been in about 9 years. I came in, I was 22 years old.
Oh, so you were a little older too.
Yep, I was married at the time, had a kid. I was living on my own, had a job, but it was 2008, and that's when...
housing crisis.
Nice old
right
housing
in the face.
Crash. Yep. I had a job lined up. I was getting out of a technical school for automotive stuff. Had a job lined up. That dealership shut down. I ended up moving about 9 hours away from where I was. And I started looking for jobs there. Nothing was really hitting, so I started exploring my options, and the Air Force came up.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I'm pretty hands-on. I can use my skills there. Talked to the recruiter, and 8 months later, do you solemnly swear?
Yeah, yeah.
There I am.
Now you're super stoked every day. Okay, so one of the things Defense Department leaders continue to talk about today is military operating as a joint force. That keeps coming up over and over again. So throughout your guys' careers being deployed, you've seen that in action, I'm sure, where you're working alongside sister services. If you could just kind of talk about maybe one experience or a couple experiences where, you know, that was just an awesome experience, like something that you weren't expecting, and out of that joint service, something cool came out of that. We can start with you, Sergeant Schlingman. Yeah, we'll just start every time and
start with me.
Swing across.
There was every deployment. I've been on 3 deployments so far, and every one I've had to have some sort of inter-service work with the, you know, Army and Air Force. Haven't had the misfortune or fortune, as it may be, to work with Marines.
Right, right.
But it's been either Army or Air Force I've been working with. Afghanistan, I fell under an Army commander, so I had to work with them, learn their lingo, had a little experience from coming through here at Shepherd, kind of understood their ranks, didn't really understand it, remember it much.
Yeah, that's a really useful thing we talked about a little bit. Like, in my career field, when I was in the Air Force, I never had to deal with sister services. Really, one time in Diego Garcia, I had to deal with Navy ordnance guys.
Yes.
But your guys' rank is really complicated to me. And even though my whole family I grew up with is Army, I still don't really know the Army ranks, even though my brothers are in. So the fact that the trainees at tech school already that's already kind of ingrained. So when you
we had a little bit, we get familiarization with it.
Right. That's awesome.
It is, and did my deployment there in Afghanistan, work with them hand in hand. I'd be able to call them up, go, hey, I need, can you guys send out on the next convoy XYZ parts? And okay, cool. And they send it out, and we had a very good working relationship.
Right.
And then another deployment I did, my relief at the camp I was maintaining was Air Force. Air Force CE was coming in, which was, why is Air Force coming out here on a deployment? But they showed up. I guess they didn't want to go to Kuwait or
right
wherever the nice cushy ones are. They sent them out to where we were and did a good turnover with them. Lingo was a little different. Hey, this is, you know, we call it an environmental control unit. They're like, oh, this is an AC unit. Okay. We could understand each other, but after the turnover, we were able to come together and get that camp maintained and continue maintaining.
Awesome. Awesome. What about you?
I've got some experience on the job site, but most of my experience is actually working on staff with other services. My last assignment was in Hawaii, which is like you end up just like coordinating with everybody in a station like Oahu. So
was that at Fort Schaffner?
Schofield Barracks.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I was stationed at, but I ended up going down to some of the other locations over the time. And the one thing I learned is one, in the Army, the rule of thumb is if it's silver shiny or gold shiny, salute it. And that does not apply with the United States Navy. Like, God bless you guys.
Right.
You know, we so like to make it interesting for everybody else.
And, Air Force ranks I picked, carry on that one, Air Force ranks I picked up pretty quickly because even though there's, like, a little bit of discrepancy, like, my favorite is Army Staff Sergeant is E6.
Right.
Air Force Staff Sergeant is
E5, yeah.
So, like, getting around that cognitive dissonance to understand what we were talking about made it pretty interesting. But, like, the technical proficiency of working with both the Navy and the Air Force was great. So in the Army, we tend to be, as engineers, a lot more generalist. We don't really get the as complex tasks as a branch for construction like the Air Force and the Navy do. Like, we don't do HVAC for the most part. So getting some of that technical expertise from working with the other services was really great. So what we generally bring for the United States Army to the other services is just straight grunt labor.
Right.
Like we've got the manpower to do it. I don't want to say we're behind on technical proficiency. We just kind of focus on something a little bit more rudimentary because
right.
we don't really need that level of construction.
Okay. Well, that's awesome. Sergeant Shaw?
So my first deployment, Afghanistan 2013, we were in a basically a build-up unit. We were the first of our kind in Afghanistan. And basically our task was we took one or two members from each career field, and this was an all Air Force team, but you'd have a plumber, a structures guy, you'd have a heavy equipment operator if needed, you'd have an HVAC guy, an electrician, a generator guy, and we'd all be thrown on this team. And we'd use, you know, Army logistical support, we'd use Air Force logistical support if needed. And they'd say, hey, get on this helicopter, go to this FOB. And we'd get to this forward base, and Army would be there going, hey, we don't have enough infrastructure support, we don't have enough guys to be able to fix this stuff, can you fix it for us? So my main mission in Afghanistan was go to an Army FOB, fix what they need to fix, or order parts for it, and then come home. And I'd be there sometimes 2 or 3 days, sometimes I'd be there 36 hours straight forward, but that would be our job.
Wow.
And
it was
definitely interesting going to support the other units downrange because we were split up between Bagram and Kandahar. The guys at Kandahar even went down as far to, I think it was what, Leatherneck?
Way down south.
Yeah, way down south. A couple of them helped the Marines down there. And our whole unit was like 150 people, but they'd split us off into a bunch of different teams. So we were 7-8 man teams going out, going fixing, you know, generators. We fixed a 400-foot deep well for an Army camp that was also a Afghan National Army and police base. So we did a lot of work for the ANAs as well. So we did a lot of work for the Afghan Army. And that was kind of cool working even with them.
Sure.
Because, I mean, you have the language barrier, but at the same time, you're there for what the mission was to work with Host Nation, build up the support, and actually, be the reason why we were there, to help them,
right,
help them improve their stuff. My second deployment was to Cuba at the detention center. So you have Guantanamo Bay, and then you have the Joint Task Force, which is all five branches.
Right.
So you had all of them there. Marines were in charge of security for the whole area. You had Coast Guard doing their job on their patrols. Navy was, that was, I guess, a main hub for them.
Uh-huh.
But for the actual detention center itself, Navy did a lot of medical. They did medical, they did the JAG stuff. Army was a lot of the MPs, there were a lot of the guards. And then we were a 30-team squadron, like a 30-man squadron. That was it. There were 30 Air Force people on a base of, 11,000, 12,000-plus people.
Right.
And we were like the go-to crew to fix that. So we got to work hand-in-hand with the Army again. We went through their logistical systems. So if we needed to order stuff, sometimes that would actually be a little bit of a headache, because we had to go through the Army system that we weren't used to.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
And a funny story was, when I first showed up there, one of our structures guys was building a cabinet system for one of the buildings. And I guess fell through the cracks, and the hole didn't show up, whatever. But the handles for the cabinets didn't get ordered. And they're like, well, if we try to order through the Army, it's going to take 2 to 3 months. You end up ordering parts off of Amazon.
Got there faster.
I got there in about 2 to 3 weeks. So, you have the headaches here and there sometimes. Depends on who you're working with. But overall, as a whole experience, it was definitely entertaining. It was fun to learn things about other people, how the way they do business. So, it's definitely an eye-opening experience to see how other people do that business.
I wanted to ask too, and this is just my own gee whizzery. So, like I said, the only time I ever worked with a sister service when I was active duty was with Navy Ordnance when I was in Diego Garcia. And you get a bunch, having brothers that are Army and a dad that's Army being the only guy that was ever Air Force, you get a bunch of sister service, lighthearted, ribbing. Mm-hmm. But when it came to jobbing, I never ever saw an issue. Everybody just hit the ground and got along great. And it was always kind of interesting to learn how the other guys did their job and how, you guys just call it this dumb thing, but it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I always thought that was cool. So another thing I wanted to talk about. So you, at this point in where you guys are at in your careers, working in a joint environment's not new for you guys, but flashback, especially for the Army and Navy folks that we have. Flashback to when you first showed up at training here. So you've gone through basic training, and then you show up for your tech school, essentially, and it's at an Air Force base. What was that like?
Well, I got my orders to leave Recruit Training Command, and it said, report to Shepherd Air Force Base. And I'm like, whoa, pump the brakes. Am I going to the right place here?
Yeah.
Air Force Base. And I talked to my, drill instructor, so to speak, to keep it basic. He's like, yep, that's where you're going. Get on the plane. Go. Now.
Bye.
I'm like, okay. Wild my way on the plane. Show up here in Wichita Falls. And I'm like, this is the end of the world. Awesome. And then just start going through the training here. Show up to class. Like, hey, so we got 5 Navy guys and girls. And then we got 5 Air Force. I'm like, okay, we're training together. Interesting. Let's see how this goes. And we slowly developed together through that training.
Yeah.
And we didn't see Air Force, Navy. It was, this is our class. We got to get through this training and then went our separate ways at graduation.
Yeah. That's awesome. Everybody worked fine together.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Cool experience. We worked great together. And then when I moved over to the plumbing shop for training there, hey, here's Army. I'm like, we got Army here too. All right, when's the Marines showing up?
Yeah, right.
And they never did, thankfully, but
poor Marines, we love those.
Yeah,
guys.
I know.
They are across the street.
I know they are across the street.
We have some on base, yeah.
But yeah, worked with the soldiers there in the plumbing shop, and same thing. We all came together, finished our booths, all the troubles we had to go through, and like no, I mean, there's a little inter-service ribbing every once in a while, but
right,
it wasn't
lighthearted.
Yeah, it wasn't, I'm not working with you, you're Army.
Right.
I'm better than you.
Everybody's getting to the same place.
Absolutely.
What about you, Sergeant Misho?
So, funnily enough, so since we all come together like three different career fields into at E6, I actually, when I went through technical training, I actually went through Gulfport, Mississippi as a carpentry masonry, but it's a joint school as well. So like interacting with the Air Force and Navy, it's kind of weird because I started all life out in a combat career field. So it's extremely regimented, you know, high and tight, dress right, dress and all that. And then just seeing how the different service cultures emphasize different things. That was probably the weirdest thing for me. Not so much that I was working with Air Force and Navy, but just the different priorities on stuff.
So, like, what's a good example of, like, a weird thing that, like, the Air Force stresses about where you were like, really, this is a thing that...
Probably the one thing that always, like, it still kind of makes my eyes twitch this day is that the Air Force does is you refer to everybody a rank above you as sir.
That drives me insane.
Sure.
Even referring to a senior airman. Like a junior airman to a senior airman as sir, and it just like it makes my eyes twitch because
right.
sir is commissioned officer.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I mean, like being an instructor now and having a lot of Air Force students, like I've just kind of grown with it and like yeah, whatever. I did have a bit of an issue like when I first showed up and I was interacting with the squadron senior non-commissioned officer because. There's no way I couldn't get past the barrier of I'm not gonna call you outrank me, but I can't call you sir. So moving past that hump and finding something that you know would still be respectful, but not using that word
right
was probably the weirdest thing for me.
Yes. What about you, Sergeant Shaw?
Oh yeah, the whole sir and ma'am thing. It's we're bred day one at basic training. Like, it's a part of our reporting instructions.
Right.
But that's to train you to report to an officer, you know, in case you're ever in trouble or anything. But
well, I had an E7 tell me one time, just to interrupt you real quick, sorry. I had an E7 tell me one time when I was in FTAC, and I think this is probably how the whole Air Force looks at that. If you call a female ma'am, and he was talking about how when I go to McDonald's and the girl is ringing me up at the checkout counter, I address her as ma'am the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
If you use sir and ma'am for everyone, you're never incorrect. Like... It might be annoying, but you're still not going to put yourself in a place where you're wrong. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
At least that's kind of how they taught us. But anyways, go ahead, sir.
So, yeah, with that, like working, it's a natural reaction to say if you hear someone call for you, and, you know, most of our career field, I would say, is venture to be like 90% male. So most of the time, your first reaction is someone calls for you, you turn around and you go, sir, just to say, hey, I acknowledge you, and then you can turn around and figure out who that person you're talking to is.
Right.
But then, you know, coming through here, coming back to being an instructor, actually working with the Navy and just referring to them as their rates constantly, I keep getting, I wouldn't say yelled at, but I keep getting corrected by the Navy chiefs going, stop calling me sir, stop calling me ma'am. And it's like, it's chief. And I'm like, I know chief, I'm sorry ma'am, or I'm sorry sir. And then I'm just like, I did it again.
Yes.
And
it's hard not to do.
It's a hard habit to break at that point, whereas, you know, with the Army and Navy, it's hard to just refer to us as sir or
right.
What have you. And it's definitely just, it's a steep learning curve for that, but nobody really ever gets, you know, in a twist over it.
Right, everybody realizes it's a culture thing.
Yes.
Yeah, very much so.
Sure.
But it was definitely interesting, especially coming through as a student, coming here, you know, I was in the same boat as UT?
UT1.
UT.
Yeah.
See, it's the rate thing.
It's the rate.
Why can't you say petty officer?
You
or
call
whatever.
Me petty officer.
Yeah.
That's fine.
There was a big snafu
right.
about that last year.
Yeah, we don't talk about that. That's a sore subject for Navy.
Okay.
Yes. But coming through, you know, it was Air Force, Navy, and we had one Army guy in our class.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And we were split up until it was time to go our separate ways and do the Air Force unique, and then the Army only stayed for like half the course.
Did you know,
I
did they talk to you?
Too hard for him or something.
Yeah, it really does.
Did they talk to you about, I like that you pointed that out though, I want to come back to that, but did you know that you were going to show up to a joint training environment, like as a kid back then, like did you know that you were going to show up and there was going to be Army guys there and Navy guys there?
Not a clue.
Yeah.
I showed up and my first, you know, week there, it's all Air Force, all Air Force, all Air Force, and then I get to my first class and I'm like,
right,
You look different.
Yeah.
You don't look like me.
What do I call you? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's funny.
And nope. Yeah, learning that was definitely an eye-opening experience. And then they kind of taught us through our whole ITRO system. It's like, you will work with them. And lo and behold, both my deployments have been with somebody other than Air Force. So.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it makes sense, like, from a DOD perspective to use those assets. Sorry, Misha, you said something that I thought was interesting, but true. I talk to my brothers about this all the time. Like, the Army solves problems, you know, and I realize there's exceptions to all of this, but like the Army will solve problems with like people. Like, you guys have the people to throw at the problem.
Yep.
So the fact that you show up at a joint base with that asset to solve, like, yeah, you guys know what you're doing, but you have four guys, so let me hit it with my 40 guys and we'll get this down the road. I think that's cool that you pointed that out.
Yeah, that's kind of like I find the most interesting thing about working with other branches is like we have a little bit of verbiage difference, but it's more in how we approach each of the different problems. Like my kind of bias, I guess you could say, is that the Air Force is like the extreme end of the technical proficiency side.
Right.
But they have compared to the other services, they have a smaller base to draw from as far as like we'll keep with engineering. And then like somewhere in between the Air Force and the Army is the Navy, where they have a little bit more personnel and slightly less focus on certain areas, not necessarily technical proficiency, but they're kind of in between the Air Force and the Army.
Right.
And then the Army is kind of like what we were just talking about, where like we got a lot of dudes and dudettes.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
And sometimes I still slip. Like our problem solving is generally like, okay, how many people can we cram on this job site to bang this all out in one go?
Yeah.
And like you said, that's a very generalized view.
Right, right.
It's kind of how we approach it, I guess.
No, I think that's good to point out. So one of the other things I wanted to ask real quick is like, while you were in training here, what do you think the most valuable thing you got out of training here, and if that had to do with ITRO, which what does ITRO stand for again? Can somebody tell me what that stands for one more time?
Inter-Service Training Review Organization.
Yeah.
God bless the DOD.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that one example you have of the most important thing you learned in tech training. If ITRO played a role in that, I'd be interested to hear like what role ITRO played in that. Do you have a good example? Maybe not.
Gotta think on that one.
I think the best way to describe it is with the way the whole DoD wide is shaping up and the way our mission's constantly changing. I think the big thing to take away from it is just get used to working with other branches.
Right.
Yeah.
That's going to be the future. We are not always going to have a mission where just solely the Navy can solve it, or just solely the Army can solve it, or even the Air Force. And so you're going to have to learn how to network, communicate, and basically understand the other side of the coin on who you're working with.
Yeah, definitely. It's like the battlefield dynamics, as they say, is changing to the point where we can't say, okay, Air Force, you guys go ahead and fly the planes, drop the bombs, do all that good stuff. Army, you guys rush in, and Navy, you stay out in the big gray floaty things and launch projectiles. It's an ever-evolving thing, so the more we can train together, we can be like, okay, I've got a Navy guy, I got an Army soldier, and I got an Air Force airman. What do they bring to the table? Instead of putting that big search out throughout the area of operation saying, okay, I need a Navy guy who specializes in concrete. Well, you could have a base full of Army dudes that know how to
do concrete. Yeah.
Okay, come on, you're going to this project. Or Air Force, you know how to do electrical, you're coming with me.
Right.
And you have more ingredients to pull from to make that cake, so to speak.
Yeah.
To get to that finished product if we train together.
Yeah, I think so. One of the other things that I wanted to talk about, but I think that kind of segues really well into that. So all the CE career fields working together, do you think training in that environment gives you a big advantage? I mean, I think we kind of covered that, but does that give you a big advantage, do you think, when you get out into the field and you're actually practicing this? Like, you kind of already know what the Air Force is going to bring to the table, what the Army's going to bring to the table, what the Navy's going to bring to the table, mm-hmm. because you trained with them. So you kind of know how they're taught, and you think that's pretty monumental once it's operational time.
Absolutely. Like coming from having different instructors, you know, I have Navy instructors, Air Force instructors, Army instructors, they all have different experiences, different ways of doing things, and that projects onto the new students a different way of thinking.
Right.
Whereas if it's straight, you're only taught by Army, you're only going to get that Army mentality, and it, you know, you could stay in a bad cycle.
Yeah.
If you get that outside input from Air Force, but well, over here in the Air Force, we did this way, slightly different. Now you can break that cycle maybe and bring something new, improve a system.
Sure. Yep.
From the ground up.
Yeah, it widens the base.
Definitely.
So like the more experience you have, the more experience you have to draw from on a project site. And one thing that CE, I found that, at least in the Army, does better than almost any other career field is problem solve. Because every day you show up to the job site, there's 15 million new problems that you've got to solve them, because you can't miss your hit times from the next node to the next node to complete the project in time to standard. So like having that wider knowledge base just gives you more to draw from. And as you progress in the ranks, and then you start advising officers like, hey, you know, if we need this level of technical proficiency, we've got these guys over here in the Air Force. We can hit them up to get the same result, because we can't pull from our own dudes.
Right.
Or dudettes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Continuing on with that, we've got a couple books that we use across all three branches called the UFC.
Hmm.
And it's basically a set of rules that all three branches have to follow. So coming through the school, coming and learning all at the same time, we've all learned the same thing. So everyone knows how the job's supposed to be done. So it actually makes meshing with the other services a whole lot easier as well. You know that you all went to the same school, you were all taught the same way to do it, you all have the same rules to follow. There just may be a couple different things here and there, just, you know, specialties to the actual service.
Sure.
So coming through the same school, all learning the same way, the same rules, helps out a lot in the long run as well, because it allows you to go to another base that might not necessarily be for your service, and you still know how to work on that stuff.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I'd be curious too, just kind of gee whiz, if you guys have examples. If you don't, that's okay. But if you have like one example of like where you learned something about your job from a sister service, that just because maybe their perspective on it was different, like, you know, that the Navy looks at this problem the same way all the time, but an Army guy or gal was able to show you, you know, a different way to approach it, like, oh, I don't know why we don't do it that way, but maybe we should. And maybe you don't have an example of that, but if you did, I'd love to hear about it.
So I teach the plumbing stuff. And up until I showed up here in 2017, I'd never seen a power threader for a piece of pipe in my life.
Okay.
Because we're the Army, they don't give us the expensive toys, because they know we're going to break them.
Right.
Yeah. So, like, learning that, like, I can thread a pipe within seconds instead of having two privates on a hand reamer trying to do the same task that would take minutes. So learning how to use the better equipment to do this, to do a more precise job, was something I definitely got out of the schoolhouse. And learning that, I'd like to see more of that kind of equipment come into the Army. I kind of get why not, but
right.
it was a real joy to learn. And then again, like, just for me, like, we don't teach the same technical proficiency as the Air Force, so getting to see how the Air Force does certain tasks that require that precision, I was able to start translating some of those skills down to the Army equivalent. Like, hey, you know, this is a good idea if you have access to this resource. You know, if you don't, this is the bare bones version.
Okay, yeah, that's good. Anybody else got anything like that?
I would definitely say, going along with what Sergeant
Michaud. Don't worry about it, man.
But the Air Force, the way they teach you is they say, do it right with the right tools. And we get trained in that way so much that sometimes we forget that there are other ways to do it if you might not necessarily have
right. The
right tools.
Right.
We were, going back to when I was in Afghanistan, we had a well that we had to replace the motor in it, and it had leaky gaskets, so only about 10% of the water was actually getting up to the tank where it needed to. So we had to figure out a way to take all these 20-foot sections of pipe out of this well. And the Army guys were like, well, we got a chain and a forklift. Let's make it happen.
Right, yeah.
And it was kind of just one of those things where we're like, it was, we relied on the Army. They're like, hey, we know this equipment.
Right.
We've got the right way to do it. Because we were kind of in a bind on thinking how we're going
to
do it.
And you're used to, like, your special.
Just throws the chain around it like you see the oil rig guys do. He throws the chain around it, hooks it up to the forklift, goes, whoop, all right, first section's out. Let's keep doing this.
Nice. We're
like, send it. Let's do it.
Nice.
So you learn definitely a way to think outside of box when you're working with the other services, because maybe they've had to deal with the problem. Maybe they didn't have the Gucci gear that they used before. So when you're in that bond, you can be, oh, hey. And then, you know, when you're in a place where you can use the nice gear, you're like, oh, hey, this is so much easier.
Right. Maybe appreciate it a little bit more when you can use the pipe threader. Yeah.
Yep.
What about you?
And coming back here as an instructor, just seeing as the technology has advanced, not to say CBs are a little stuck in our ways when it comes to equipment, but definitely there is better stuff out there, seeing what the Air Force has.
Sure.
And now when I leave teaching here, I can bring that back to...
Right, advise command. Yeah, maybe we can buy this thing.
Advise and be, hey, when I was at my instructor duty, I saw this piece of equipment that is worth way better than this Vietnam era stuff.
Right. Yeah.
Probably get told no. That's the way we do it. We're stuck in our ways, but at least I can try to say, hey, there's better options there.
Sure. Yeah, you know, that's good. In a training environment, you know, you go to class with a bunch of people that you weren't expecting to work with, develop these good relationships, you go out into your career. Is there anything that you wish you could go back and, like, tell your younger self to help? So specifically to this, not just a broad term. No. But is there something specific that you wish you could go back and tell your younger self in terms of working in a joint service situation to maybe help make that easier, or something like, hey, you're going to run into this event. Like, don't call Army guys sir. It's going to get you in a bad spot. You know what I mean? Do you have an example of something like that?
I probably would have told myself, network with the people better. You know, get their contact information, because there's been times I'm sure I could have hit up one of the guys or gals I was in school with, hit them up on, you know, send them an email.
Sure.
We didn't really have Facebook back then, but yeah, hit them up on email. Hey, I'm at this place. Do you know anybody I could talk to
really
to get a part? Or, hey, I know it's been like 5 years. I've got this problem. Have you ever experienced it? Can I get some feedback? And vice versa, work both ways.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Yeah, definitely wish I would have networked a little bit more. Not that the relationships weren't good. And we just, okay, high five.
Yeah, that's kind of military way, right?
Away we go.
Yeah.
I definitely agree. I didn't start until way too late in the game to start building up that contact list for the same reason. Like, you know, you're never going to be perfect, and you're eventually going to bump into at least one problem, especially on a project site, and where you're going to be like, I have absolutely no idea what to do with this. And then not having at least a couple of people that you can trust to contact back with and say, hey, look, have you guys ever bumped into this? Like, how do you fix it? How did you do it? Like, it's just, it would have really helped out quite a few times.
Yeah, same thing. You know, start networking early. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, I've ran into people, not necessarily from other branches, but I've been on a deployment with my roommate from tech school. We were both at the same deployed location.
That's
same
the
time.
Next thing I wanted to talk about. Yeah.
And then working with some of the guys there, you will run into them later on. So it's like, don't ever burn bridges. That's like one of the worst things you can do. Try to establish that communication across the branches for sure.
Yeah,
that's a little story for me. I remember there was a guy, maybe he'll end up listening to this somewhere, but his name was Billy Cutler. He kept a book. This was before Facebook. He kept a book, and he would write like something in our career field that was like hard, you know, like maybe not hard, just a task we had to do, like AIM 120 testing. And he would like write a guy's name in there that was really good at that and their contact info. And he kept that, you know, just the standard green binder that everybody has. And it was just full of people that like, this guy's good at this. and their number. I remember thinking as like an A1C, like, you're a lunatic, but that sounds like it would have been a smart move to do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Did you guys run into any, have you guys ever run into anyone in the field? So, not from your own branch, but like from a sister service that you knew from training? Have you ever run into anybody?
I have not, but interestingly enough, one of my students right now, his supervisor was in my class, my actual tech school class. He's like, hey, do you remember Airman so-and-so? I was like, sounds familiar. Describe him. He described him like, yep, that's him. Why? How do you know? Oh, he's my supervisor back at my home base. I was like, really?
Well, that's crazy.
Wow, that is a small, small world.
Yeah,
so never actually worked hand-in-hand with somebody, but now to see that they're in a supervisor position and still in is pretty neat to hear.
Yeah, that's awesome. Any of you guys ever?
No, not outside of my own branch, unfortunately.
Okay. The closest thing that I've gotten is one of our Army instructors at the electrical schoolhouse, Sergeant Pepperling, was at the same base as me, just at different times.
Okay.
And we had literally seen the same stuff, worked on the same things.
Gotcha.
And that's about as close as I've gotten, but just to know that we're all doing the same mission at the end is still pretty cool.
Okay. Yeah, that's awesome. That is really good. So the last thing I want to kind of ask you guys, and then we'll close this out, just how valuable do you think it was to be in an ITRO environment right out of the gate, like in a training environment? Do you think it would have been detrimental for you to show up at your first deployment, and that's the first time? Like for me, mm-hmm. My first deployment was the first time I ever worked with a sister service. There was a lot of barriers that I had to jump over before we could actually get to the work mm-hmm. because I didn't train like that.
Yeah.
So
absolutely. I mean, we're all coming here. All the students are coming fresh out of boot camp. So they have 8, 12 weeks, whatever, of that's my branch. That's all I know. Drop them over here in a joint service, and they haven't really had too much time to build up those preconceived notions of, oh, it's Air Force.
Right.
They're all, all they do is they cry with their per diem money when life gets hard.
Right, right, right.
Army, all that they, you know, they don't know what a bathroom is, and they just dig a hole out back.
Right.
Where's my line?
Yeah. Or, I don't know, Navy.
I love this guy.
Yeah. Navy, I don't know what you guys can say bad about us other than, you know.
Right, just doing it right.
Just doing it right. But
well, your football program's starting to suffer.
It is. It is definitely starting to go downhill. And, you know, we figured we want to keep you guys showing up at the games. We'll let you win a couple and then crush your souls later.
Oh, yeah.
It's a rookie year. It's rebuilding year.
Yes. But it's definitely great. Because if I would have gone my entire training as just knowing Navy, send me out to a deployment site, like, okay, you're going to fall under an Army command. I'll be like, I'll see a bunch of, you know, squiggly lines on his chest, and he's barking orders at me. I'm like, who are you? What? I'm assuming you got a lot of stuff on your chest. You outrank me, okay, but who are you?
Right.
But now that I've gone through that training, I can look like, oh, okay, he's an E6, so he's a petty officer first class in the Navy. I better listen to what he says.
Right.
So it helps eliminate any, you know,
you can just get to the work.
Yeah, you get to work without fighting over who's in charge.
Right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
So it literally is culture shock. So like if you've ever traveled to another country, like England's a great example. Like they speak English, but that's about right where the stopping point is. And God help you if you go through Wales. But like they use words differently and to mean different things, and they place certain different emphasis. And
right.
We as branches do that same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So getting that right out of the gate in the technical school while all learning the same material the same way to the same standard, like just, it gets you over like 2 to 3 weeks of like, how do you guys do this? What is this? What resources? And, you know, it saves a lot of the questions and the confusion that would like, I'm firmly certain we're there prior to this course or these courses being joint schools.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't even imagine what it was like before we were doing business this way.
Yeah. It's definitely highly recommended. I think other career fields just across other branches they could probably learn a lot from what we do, because we've got, you know, the Air Force command here. Then you go up to Fort Leonard Wood, and then you have Army Command there where you send your other students to.
Mm-hmm.
And then in, what is it, Gulfport?
Gulfport,
Mississippi,
yes.
You've got Navy Command down there.
Navy's in charge of all the other branches there.
So it's it's definitely that culture shock after learning your ways for, you know, two and a half months, and then you go into that next branch. But it ultimately, I think it definitely helps in the long run. So when you are downrange and you do run into it, you're like, okay, I know how you guys are. I know how you react to things, and ultimately it helps meshing with as a unit occur a lot easier.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Well, I think that's it, guys. Appreciate it.